the University of Mississippi, the one and only one, the flagship university.
Now time for another edition of the Rebel Wives Live podcast, presented by Rebels 247 of the 24/7 Sports Network. Complete coverage of Ole Miss athletics and recruiting news from the Rebels 247 staff, David Johnson, Michael Court, and Dave Bevan. Rebel Wives Live is also available free in the iTunes store. Now, here's your host, David Johnson.
Everyone's having a great week so far, and it's kind of like the weekend has come to town a little bit early with it being Thursday and SEC baseball in the air. We'll certainly get in depth and talk about Ole Miss's big series with South Carolina that will play out at Swayze Field over the weekend. The big story right now inside the state of Mississippi is the Devil's coming to town. You know, we've kind of been sitting back on the sidelines and watching everybody else kind of get up in arms and get in Twitter wars with Michigan head coach Jim Harbaugh. Now all of a sudden Jim Harbaugh's coming to Mississippi, going to be in Pearl on June the 8th for a football camp, put that in quotation marks. He and his entire Michigan staff flying into the Jackson Airport, and they'll be on hand for a front row seat as guest coaches at a Pearl High School football camp. And I had a chance to talk to Pearl head football coach John Perry last night. Very gracious in talking to me and giving me his time. And we talked for quite some time about this. But let me tell you, I'll start this discussion by saying this. Pearl High School head coach John Perry is doing this without a malicious bone in his body. So all of the people jumping on his back about, hey, you know, why is he doing this? Ole Miss fans are going to hate him. State fans are going to hate him. Listen, he's a head football coach at Pearl High School in Pearl, Mississippi. Now, then, this is just my opinion. You can certainly disagree with me if you want to. But had it not been at Pearl and his program not reaped the benefits of hundreds of kids who are going to show up that day, tons of media coverage that's going to be there that day, and the proceeds go to benefit Perry's Pearl High School football program, it would have been right down the road somewhere else. Somebody was going to give Jim Harbaugh a platform to come in and do this inside the Magnolia State. Brandon High School was the first option. They had some things going on over there facility-wise that made that impossible. So Brandon picks up the phone and calls Pearl's head coach, and John Perry says yes. Perry didn't instigate anything about bringing Michigan into Mississippi like he's being accused of. He's simply taking advantage, as he should, of a big old football camp that's going to be on his campus with a lot of media pointed in that direction. So I don't think it's fair to take it out on John Perry that Jim Harbaugh has decided he's coming to Mississippi to check out some Magnolia State talent. Does it hurt in recruiting? I don't think so. I really don't see Jim Harbaugh spending 3 hours in the hot Mississippi sun watching a kid at a football camp make that kid want to go to Ann Arbor, Michigan. I think the end result, it'll be very negligible of an effect, excuse me, on Ole Miss or Mississippi State as far as his presence in the Magnolia State goes. So is it a big to-do about nothing? Nah, it's not, because there's a lot of controversy as to whether or not the NCAA should allow coaches to do this. The SEC does not. That's why you haven't had Nick Saban setting up camp in Detroit yet, because the SEC won't let you go. Michael Court, what's your thoughts on the Harbaugh gate and the fact that there's a Yankee invading Mississippi?
You know, I really think that it really benefits everybody. I'm in a lot of the same camps as you with this, and that, you know, Harbaugh's a brilliant guy. He's manipulating the media and getting his name out there a ton. You know, sort of like I don't want to delve into this, but sort of like, you know, what Donald Trump does. Everyone's always talking about.
Hey, come out, because if you read the story I did with Perry last night, and I almost fell out of my seat when he said it, Perry was talking along, and all of a sudden he just gives me, you know how you're interviewing somebody and you know you just gotten a golden nugget, and we're just talking, and he goes, well, you know, he's really like the Donald Trump of football. Everybody wants to talk about him. Everybody's talking about it. Go ahead, Michael, but great point right there. John Perry made that point himself last night.
He's exactly right. I mean, Harbaugh gets talked about all the time, whether it's the barbs that he threw at the at Butch Jones or at the Ohio State athletic director, or even when he's really bad. We all remember the epically horrendous interview he did with Colin Cowherd. That got everywhere. It was the most downloaded podcast in ESPN history. And you just look at what he's doing for the program. He's really getting Michigan's name back on the map. After being dormant for so many years during the end of the Lloyd Carr era, ended with a thud, and then Rich Rod era did not go great. The Brady Hoke era, despite a Sugar Bowl win, not great up in Ann Arbor. And he's really spreading the in Prattville last year and at IMG for spring break. And so he's really getting his name out there in the South, which is where you have to recruit. And we all talk about how great Alabama's roster is, and it's as talented as anyone in the country, but Ohio State's roster can go toe-to-toe with them, and they beat Alabama because, you know, they're getting these Southern kids. They're getting a lot of kids from Georgia, from Tennessee, a ton from Florida. Their best players, Von Bell, Joey Bosa, Raekwon McMillan, T.J. Barrett, all from SEC footprints, something that really hurt, you know, Jim Tressel and Woody Hayes because they couldn't recruit in the South. And Harbaugh's trying to do the same sort of footprint, and I think he's going to get that program back to where they want to be. But I also agree with you on the fact that he's not going to be getting Mississippi kids up there. We see how hard it is for Alabama to pull kids from inside the state. This year was sort of an anomaly where, you know, they get Lashley and they get Knott and guys like that. But typically, Alabama has a ton of struggles getting those Mississippi kids, where they grow up in Mississippi State strongholds or Ole Miss strongholds, and a lot of these kids have so much state pride that they want to stay at home, they want to play for their home state, they want to be close to their families. So I don't think we're going to be seeing a mass exodus of Mississippi recruits going up there. And it's certainly great for these kids to get, you know, some tutelage from a coach that coached in a Super Bowl, you know, less than 5 years ago. And so I really think it's mutually beneficial for everyone, except, you know, the one who's probably getting the least out of it is the Michigan program, because they're not going to be getting any Mississippi players going up there that weren't already leaving the state anyway.
Yeah, I don't see that either. And, you know, the one thing, if someone asked me this question earlier today is, you know, why in the world would Harbaugh come to Mississippi, considering that you know, the 2017 in-state Mississippi class is considered to be kind of a Power 5 challenged, so to speak. Not that many Power 5 guys in the state this year. But here's the thing you got to keep in mind. There just won't be 2017 kids down there. 2018 kids, 2019 kids, 2020 kids. And that's where you got to worry about a little bit, that Harbaugh comes in and maybe he sees a kid from Benoit, Mississippi, that's a 2020 kid or 2019 kid that no one's ever heard of, that hasn't been to any camps before, and he's able to build a 2 or 3 year relationship with a kid that he's seen early on. And, you know, that's always a possibility. But, you know, again, 3 hours under the hot Mississippi sun for Jim Harbaugh and these prospects are not going to make the prospects fall in love with Jim Harbaugh. And, you know, recruiting, sure, they'll all be excited that he's there. They'll be triple excited if he offers them. But at the end of the day, you know, things generally come back home for recruits. And when it gets real late in the process, I don't think this has any effect on it whatsoever. And Dave Bevan, I don't think Dan Mullen and Hugh Freeze are probably happy about this. But at the same time, I don't think they think it's going to hurt their efforts inside the Magnolia State. They're worried about one another. They're not worried about a carpetbagger showing up in Mississippi trying to convince kids to go to Ann Arbor, Michigan, for goodness sake. And, Dave, you've had cricket from Dan Mullen and Hugh Freeze on this pretty much since it broke yesterday afternoon. Where do you think they sit?
You know, I tend to agree with what Michael said, you know, about, you know, it's been a struggle over the years for schools like Alabama recruiting top talent inside the Magnolia State, much less, you know, Michigan head coaches coming down and expecting the same kind of success. So, you know, this kind of news, it broke wave last year, you know, with the satellite camps with Harbaugh, you know, coming into SEC territory and across the state. So it's something not new among SEC territory. Nick Saban, of course, wasn't too pleased with the satellite camps last year. But, you know, if you were to give the, you know, the green light for any SEC coach to venture over into, you know, northern territories such as Michigan to host camps, I don't think you're going to find too many that would, you know, not take that opportunity. So, you know.
Well, I disagree with you there. I just don't see Ole Miss wanting to go to Michigan and run a football camp. I just don't see it. I don't think you're going to see Alabama in Indiana running a football camp. I just don't see the benefits of it, to be honest with you. I mean, Michael, he took his whole staff down to IMG and had a camp down there, and maybe I can understand that with all the talent that's there at IMG, but, you know, really, I mean, it's got to be a minimal gain for him, and I think you're exactly right. He's doing this to put Michigan football back on the map. It's certainly generating headlines. We're talking about Michigan football down here in the great state of Mississippi right here at the end of the month of March. Why? Why? Because Jim Harbaugh's coming to town. So I just don't think the SEC schools would benefit from going up there. I mean, if Ole Miss has wanted a kid from up north, Laquan Treadwell, they recruit him hard, they recruit him in the traditional way, they get him down here. I just don't think this traveling carnival of football camps and coaching, guest coaching appearances is going to really make that big of an effect. And I also think that you're going to see the NCAA put their foot down over this. And some rule changes will be coming. I think this is the last year you're going to see the Michigan caravan. Maybe Mississippi, that June 8th camp, certainly getting close to the dead period. Mississippi may be his last stop on the caravan tour if they, in fact, quote-unquote, build a wall and won't let Jim Harbaugh out of the state of Michigan. But I just don't see it as that big of a deal. I don't think you guys see it as that big of a deal. And I think if it was that big of a deal in this day and age, Hugh Freeze, Dan Mullen, one of them would have shot a tweet out. Both of them pretty active on Twitter. They've decided to kind of turn the other cheek, so to speak. And here's the deal. All right, is it any different that Louisiana Lafayette set up camp at Clinton High School last year? And Coach Perry from Pearl pointed this out, saw his running back at that camp, signed him, and he's on their team right now. You know, so you're not afraid of Louisiana Lafayette out recruiting you, obviously, if you're Ole Miss or even Mississippi State. Michigan, another deal all the way around, but that's on the other side of the world as far as these kids are concerned, all the way up there. So probably much ado about nothing, certainly worth spending our time talking about. Interesting, I asked Coach Perry last night, I said, and I already knew the answer to this, I asked him how the reaction has been, and if you know John Perry, you know he's kind of an animated guy. He's going to tell you his mind. He's like, oh, Lord. He said, you know, they were tearing me up 5 minutes after the tweet went out, and they haven't stopped yet. They being the fans from both Ole Miss and Mississippi State. And he made a point to bring it up last night to tell me his father is a season ticket holder at Ole Miss. He grew up pulling for the Rebels. He said when he pulls for somebody on a Saturday, he pulls for Ole Miss. And when it comes to kids in Mississippi signing college scholarships, he pulls for them to go to Ole Miss State, Southern Miss, or any of the other schools in the state of Mississippi. So, again, going back, I guess, around the world here, no maliciousness on the part of John Perry and his Pearl High School football program. And I'm not sure there are too many coaches in this state. There are some that would not have done it. But there are an awful lot more than John Perry at Pearl High School that would have agreed to allow Jim Harbaugh on their campus. Michael Quirk, if you're the head coach at Abbeville High School, and you get a phone call that Jim Harbaugh wants to come and work a camp at your high school, what would you tell him?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you are a everyone in this state for the most part is proud to be a Mississippian, proud to be in Mississippi, and really has that love for the state. But these coaches in high school, they're not coaching high school ball to help Ole Miss football or to hurt Ole Miss football or to help Mississippi State football or to hurt Mississippi State football. They're there to help those kids, and they're there to help their high school. And this is something that's going to do exactly that. There's no, like you said, there's no malicious intent. And also, I don't think we'll see any end result there. So it's nothing but positive to have this sort of thing happen in the state and at a small town school like that. So I think this will be, this would certainly be good. And if I was a high school coach, I'd say, come on.
Yeah, I think that's what you. I think that's anybody that answers that question honestly would do that. Particularly when you know, okay, John Perry could hold a camp at Pearl High School, have his team there, and you know maybe 30, 40 other kids, and that be it. If he's got Jim Harbaugh there, you're going to attract kids not only from all over the state of Mississippi, but from out of Louisiana, metro areas like New Orleans, and Memphis, and Birmingham. They're all coming. I mean, you know, and Perry just probably quadrupled the amount of money he'll make for his football program, which all these high school programs desperately need, just by having Jim Harbaugh fly into Jackson and come over there and watch and coach a camp for a few hours. So I don't think anyone should be attacking Perry for this. I really don't. You know, like he pointed out last night, and he's exactly right. He's the head coach of Pearl High School, and his job is to do what is most beneficial for that Pearl High School football program. And I think that should probably be the end of the story. Also invited me down that day, so I'm planning on going to Jackson on June 8th, guys, and rubbing elbows with Jim Harbaugh. What do you think about that?
Better wear your khakis.
Yeah, khakis and a blue long sleeve blue sweatshirt. Never, not gonna do it, man. I'll have my khaki shorts on and flip flops. But you know, there'll be a lot of recruits there that day. So either one of you want to jump in the bus with me and head on down to Harbaugh Field, more than welcome to go that day. Should be a lot of fun as the Michigan Wolverines coach their first football camp ever in the state of Mississippi. And watch out, world, if the NCAA doesn't put a stop to this, Harbaugh is going to be showing up somewhere else. They do have a plan. I found this out yesterday. Harbaugh and Art Briles at Baylor talking things out about hosting a camp together in Waco, where Art Briles inviting the Michigan staff down to coach a camp right alongside his coaching staff. And, you know, Briles pretty much has said, you know, well, if the kid wants to go to Michigan, go to Michigan. If he wants to play for me in Waco, stay in Waco. So not everybody gets all up in arms about Jim Harbaugh's publicity stunt here. And be interesting to see how many kids he actually picks up from the traveling circus. He did get a kid out of the Prattville, Alabama camp last year. So we'll see. We'll see if anybody from Mississippi wants to wear that yellow and blue. I did that on purpose. Maize and blue of the Michigan Wolverines. You know, a lot of buzz going on regarding recruiting right now. Some of you may have seen earlier today that 247 Sports National Analyst Steve Wilkfong cast his crystal ball for four-star Starkville, Mississippi linebacker Willie Gay to go to Ole Miss. Sources are really, really, really feeling very, very, very good about Willie Gay and Ole Miss right now. I'll caution to tell you it's very early in the process. Willie Gay is a national recruit. People are coming at him from all different directions, and more people will jump onto the pile before Willie Gay's process is completely over. But there is reason to feel good about Willie Gay and the probability or possibility, at least, that Ole Miss could pull a top-rated player right out from under Mississippi State's nose for the second consecutive year. So we'll see how all that plans out. I put a note up in the Rebel Rise, not only about Willie Gay, but Cam Akers. Things seem to be going very, very well for Ole Miss in the recruitment of Cam Akers. And we'll see what happens. Also put a note up that I am expecting that four-star Ole Miss wide receiver Didi Bui out of Morton, Mississippi, will probably, I'm hearing he will visit Mississippi State tomorrow, so on Friday. So we'll see what goes with that. Just working sources this morning, I don't think there's any real deep concern on the part of Ole Miss that that Mississippi State is in the game for Didi Bui, but it is something to monitor. Anytime you have a commit that's going to be on someone else's campus, they're there for a reason. Obviously, it's not because they've completely shut everything down. So that's kind of what's going on in the recruiting world. Of course, we've got big recruiting weekends coming up on Saturday, April 2nd and Saturday, April 9th. We'll be giving you wall-to-wall coverage both of those days. As I know Dave Bevan and myself will be camped outside the Manning Center and all day long, as some of the nation's top prospects expected to be in Oxford over the course of those 2 weeks. Spring evaluation period, we're just days away from things opening up with that, so the coaches can hit the trail again, go out and watch some of these 2017 prospects at practice and see them perform. Can't talk to them while they're there, but they can have some viewings and talk to their coaches and kind of see where things are standing for some of the 2017 prospects. If you look at the prospect rankings right now, team rankings, Ole Miss ranked 34th in the nation. It's too early to really pay attention to any of that, other than I'll tell you Ohio State is off to a ripping start with the number one class in the country with 13 commits already. Miami has 14 commits. Alabama's got 7 commits. Their class is ranked number 6 right now. Florida State, 7 commits. They're ranked number 7. Kirby Smart's gotten off to a fast start at Georgia with 6 2017 commits. Ole Miss, of course, sitting with 3 commits right now. All of them technically from within the borders of the state of Mississippi. As we mentioned, wide receiver Didi Bui, offensive lineman Ben Brown out of Vicksburg, St. Aloysius, and, of course, Jones County Junior College defensive end Markell Winters, originally a Floridian, but now at Jones County. Those are the 3 Ole Miss commits in a class ranked 34th in the nation. But again, way too early to be worrying about any of that. All right, let's switch gears to what's about to go down in O-Town. The Ole Miss South Carolina series, the Rebels ranked 6th in the nation. The Gamecocks ranked 10th in the nation, both teams with identical 20-2 overall records. South Carolina swept Arkansas last weekend in the opening weekend of SEC play. Ole Miss, of course, took 2 out of 3 up at Tennessee. And, you know, Michael, one thing we haven't talked about yet on the podcast, was the intensity of the series between Ole Miss and Tennessee, where, you know, Mike Bianco and Dave Serrano, man, they almost went at it on that play at the plate in which Errol Robinson was tagged out and the Tennessee pitcher got up in his ear afterwards. That was a tense moment in SEC baseball.
Yeah, absolutely. It all started in the 8th inning on Saturday when the leadoff hitter Hall for Tennessee came in. And personally for me, I've been around baseball all my life in various capacities. It was a fine slide. He slid right into the bag. The only dirty thing about it is he slid kind of late, which that'll peeve some shortstops or second baseman when that type of deal happens. But it was a relatively clean slide, but Errol did not really he didn't appreciate it. They started jawing, and then the field umpire got between the two of them. And then an inning later, after I believe it was Hope Herzog was thrown out at home on a fielder's choice to third, J.B. Woodman singles, and Errol Robinson comes around second and is tagged out getting to the plate. And Cox, the pitcher for Tennessee, as he's stepping over Robinson, starts talking smack right in his face, and it looked like he kicked a little dirt on Errol as well. And I can't blame Errol for this. He didn't really appreciate that too much. And so Errol pops up, and right away Coach Bianco is coming out of the dugout, pushing Errol back. And Cox just continued jawing. He continued jawing at Errol, at Bianco, and Bianco told him, you know, all right, guy, we got this. And then here comes Serrano out of the dugout. and he starts barking at Bianco. Bianco's barking back. Each coach is pointing at the opposing player and while talking to each other, and there are three umpires in between the two of them, and you even saw Knoxville police making their way down down the Ole Miss dugout toward the field. And then Bianco tried to end it pretty quickly. He was saying, you could tell by sort of the mannerisms by coach, he was saying, all right, let's get over this. And he starts moving towards the dugout, but Toronto just kept coming at him, which isn't really surprising if you know about Serrano's history. He's been kicked out of his fair share of games, has quite a temper on him. So seeing all that, it got really heated, really escalated. And this is a big year for Serrano. Getting 2 of 3 from Ole Miss would have been big for him. Obviously, he just got 1 of 3 over the weekend. But guy comes in highly successful out at Cal State Fullerton, needs a big year at Tennessee, or he's going to be firmly on the hot seat. And Tennessee really wanted to get that series and get started off right, and didn't go their way. And the two coaches certainly did not appreciate each other. And there was no love lost in the handshakes after the game. Not a single word spoken to one another, just touched the hands, kept moving.
After watching the replay of all the events that you just described, I left there thinking that Serrano could start a movement, and he should start a movement, of baseball coaches not wearing baseball uniforms. Some guys can pull it off. Mike Bianco can pull it off, okay? Serrano, it's hard to look at him in those white pants with that big orange smock that he wears. Dave Bevan, why do baseball coaches wear uniforms? Would it not just seem odd to see Hugh Freeze jog out of the tunnel at Vaught Hemingway Stadium in shoulder pads and a helmet, or Andy Kennedy out there in a pair of shorts? Weigh in on that, Dave. That's something that's I've always wondered that. I'm sure I could Google it and find the answer, but I've got Dave Bevan right here, so I might as well just lay it at Dave's feet.
Well, I guess it's tradition, over the years. It's just like how you look at, NCAA basketball coaches, wearing the full suit and ties. You're not going to see Andy Kennedy go out there in T-shirt and training shorts, or in a windbreaker outfit like Hugh Freeze and on the football field. It's just tradition over the years that baseball coaches wear the uniforms, match their players, and I agree with you. Times should change. It would be interesting to see, a basketball coach not go out there in the traditional, suit and tie.
I don't think we want – Andy Kennedy skips leg day a little bit too much for him to be going around parading in shorts.
That was a very political answer, Dave, but understandable. Michael, can you add anything to that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I've coached baseball ever since I hung up the cleats, and I do not wear baseball pants. I'll wear, I will wear the jersey and the hat, but with some jeans or some khakis to go along with that, or some khaki shorts. Not really big into the baseball pants, but you're right. Bianco can pull it off, because I've seen Bianco hitting some fungos. I think Bianco would love nothing more than to get back behind the dish and catch a game out there. So that wouldn't surprise me too much. But yeah, I don't know. It's a little odd. I guess there's not really a good explanation I can get behind it.
I've got one right here. As you guys have been opining, I've been Googling. So let's check this out. This, according to an article on CNN. And I quote, "The person who was called the manager of a team was the business manager back in the 19th century. He was the person who made sure that the receipts were paid and that the train schedules were met. He didn't make any decisions about what went on during a game. The person who did that was called the captain. He did what a manager does today, but he also played. So at first, the person we would today call a manager wore a uniform because he was a participant in the game, a la Pete Rose and the Cincinnati Reds and his player-manager days back in the 80s, if you guys are old enough to remember that. So there's the explanation right there. But Come on, somebody needs to break that fad. I'd like to see a baseball coach walk out in a pair of khakis and a knit shirt. What do you think?
Didn't the didn't one of the original founders of the Packers, I think Curly Lambeau, I think he was a player coach too when the Packers first started off.
May have been, but we've answered a question. There's factoid number one on today's Rebel Rise Live podcast, why baseball coaches wear uniforms. And it's really tough for, like, I've always felt bad for guys like Tommy Lasorda, Don Zimmerman, you know, guys that, let's face it, you know, carried a little bit of extra weight around, having to put on those baseball uniforms. I mean, you know, all due respect to Tommy Lasorda and Don Zimmerman, but they were not going to win any GQ model contracts in those baseball uniforms. That much is for sure. But then a guy like Billy Martin, you know, he always looked good in his baseball uniform. Joe Torre could certainly pull it off. As we said, Mike Bianco could as well. But Serrano at Tennessee, he falls for me in the Lasorda category, or the Zimmerman category of maybe we should come up with a Zimmerman rule here. Guys in college baseball that should not be wearing the uniform. And I'm not poking fun of fat people. You can't make fun of what you are. So there you have that. And maybe we should leave that alone. But the whole basketball coach in the suit and tie thing baffles me as well. Never really seen the need for it. I'm always pleased when I turn the television on and somebody there is not in the coat and tie. You know, they're out there in a pair of regular pants and a regular shirt or sweater vest or something like that, as opposed to the coat and tie. But there are traditionalists out there who wouldn't want it any other way. And who was it a few years ago in the NFL? Was it John Gruden that coached in a suit a couple of times, especially made suit for coaching in? Do you guys remember that?
I think it was Gruden. Now in NFL, you can't really – there is no traditional dress code. I mean, you look at Belichick, you know, with the hoodie sweater on, there's really not much dress code these days in the NFL.
We had Joe Pa for the longest time. He wore a suit on the sideline up in Happy Valley, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And I'll be honest with you, I've tried to erase all of those Penn State football memories from my mind after the whole Sandusky scandal. Just, I don't know if I'll ever get over that. And those surgically white road uniforms that they wore and Paterno running out in the black shoes and the short sleeve shirt and the tie. And now, you know, after everything that came to light up there and what happened under Paterno's watch, I'm not a Paterno apologist. I think that was horrible. And I think it certainly, affected his legacy. And since we're on that, I mean, Dave, what do you think about that situation at Penn State, and what did it do to Joe Paterno's legacy?
I mean, it completely damaged his legacy. I mean, talk about statues being taken down, and you know, it's just a whole. It was a whole scandal that you know it had nothing to do with football, and it. And it was handled inside the administration. It was not handled correctly. I mean, that through the investigation that was seen outside of the NCAA investigation, the penalties that went down to Penn State, the terminations across the administration. I mean, That was what was coming, and it was handled correctly, in my opinion, by the NCAA. Thinking about, I still had the suits and ties in my head as well. You know, Michael mentioned Paterno wearing the tie. Jackie Sherrill at Mississippi State, he wore a tie, didn't he?
You know what, he did sometimes, and he pulled that off. I'll have to give Sherrill credit for that. I think he pulled that off, most definitely. All right, well, I hate to leave all of this interesting topical things behind here, but let's talk about what is directly in front of the Ole Miss baseball team this weekend in South Carolina. And, Michael, we know the pitching matchups for Thursday night and Friday night. Mike Bianco may have something up his short sleeve come Saturday. Tell us what's going on with the Rebels pitching rotations.
Yeah, right now, for the first time this year, there's a wrench thrown into the pitching staff. Chad Smith will get the ball on Friday, and Brady Bramlett will get the ball tonight. But Sean Johnson has been he's been replaced with a TBA tab by the Ole Miss baseball media staff. And so it remains sort of in limbo of who's going to go on Saturday, whether it's going to be Sean Johnson, who has a sub-2 ERA, and who has struggled early on in games but really found himself and pitched well to close it out. And it's either going to be – and Johnson could still get the nod, but right now all the expectations from what I'm hearing from some folks inside the program is that the ball will go to Andy Pagnazzi, who's been really fantastic so far this year. He started a pair of midweek games. He's come in 4 times in relief in other instances and coming in long relief. And he's pitched extraordinarily well. He pitched 3 innings over the weekend against Tennessee, and he didn't allow a run until he got pulled from the game with the bases loaded. And David Parkinson came in, allowed a sac fly and a 3-run home run. So he ended up, you know, that line got a little marred. Went from 3 innings, no runs when he left, to 3 innings, 3 runs at the end of the day. But Pagnazzi, I'll tell you what, from talking to this kid, he's ready for it. This kid is a bulldog who wants the ball on the weekend. He is a team player who will take it in the midweek or who will come in as needed for 2, 3, 4 innings in long relief. But he is going to be undoubtedly a Friday or Saturday starter for Ole Miss in years to come. So he's ready to get that jump started. And I'd expect some quality things from Pagnazzi if it is indeed who gets the ball. I'll find out for certain today what the deal is. If, you know, Sean Johnson has been – he hasn't been going very long into his starts. His pitch count's been getting up there, which is – you know, that's usually reserved for strikeout pitchers. You see Brady Bramlett hasn't been getting too far into starts. He's a strikeout pitcher, he's tallying high amount of strikeouts. But Sean Johnson pitches to contact. But he has allowed a good deal of walks, as well as some hits, and gotten into some long innings and had trouble with two outs. So we'll see if it's, you know, Andy Kendi sort of, or not Andy Kendi, Mike Bianco jumping in front of that, trying to stop anything from or get ahead of the curve there. Or if, God forbid, it's sort of some tightness or tenderness in his throwing arm, because, of course, we know he had Tommy John last year. So we'll sort of get to the bottom of it today. I doubt they'll announce Pagnazzi or Johnson today unless it was some tightness and that's gone away. So we'll see. It's certainly very interesting. And they'll need all the pitching they can get, because South Carolina, they have arms for days. They're first in the SEC in ERA, a sub-2.5 as a team. They have Clark Schmidt, who's going tonight, who has a 1.27 ERA. Braden Webb will go tomorrow. He has an ERA under 2 and is very electric. Then Adam Hill at the back end of their rotation. He has an ERA under 2.5. All three starters within the top 18 in the conference in ERA among starting pitchers. So, yeah, we'll see some low-scoring games, and it'll be interesting to see who gets the nod on Saturday.
Well, everything gets underway at 6:30 p.m. this evening at Swayze Field, Ole Miss ace Brady Bramlett on the hill for the sixth-ranked Rebels. And you can follow all of the action on Rebels 247 all weekend long. And I want to remind you, too, to follow Michael Quirk on Twitter. Michael, what's that Twitter handle again?
It's at QuirkRebels247.
And Michael will be tweeting his fingers off all throughout the evening. So if you're unable to be in front of the television or in the seats at Swayze or listening on the radio and you've got your phone handy, follow Michael Quirk and he will be sure to keep you updated on everything, all of the action going on at Swayze Field. All right, guys, time for closing thoughts. Let's shift over to Dave Bevan. I know he's contemplated something. He's got something on his mind.
Well, I'm just glad the rain over here is finally washing away and can start to see the sun come out. I hope the weather is starting to brighten up over there and the fields can be dry for tonight's game. Looking forward to tonight's game. I'll be watching it on the SEC Network, so on streaming online, and it's a top 10 matchup. And like Michael said, with these arms from both teams, I highly anticipate it to be a low scoring game. So it's going to be interesting to see who can pull out on top in this matchup. Next weekend, I'll be over in Oxford with you, David. Like you mentioned, I look forward to being over there on April the 2nd for Ole Miss's Junior Day event. Getting to talk with hopefully talking with a lot of prospects, and be interested to see if some names emerge, and you know if there will be some offers coming out of that weekend. So only time will tell. It'll be interesting, and look forward to for the coverage of it.
All right, Michael. Closing thoughts is I know you're getting ready to motor over to Swayze Field and settle in for tonight's big battle.
Absolutely. Some basketball news that we saw a few days ago is JT Escobar is, of course, leaving the program. He'll be transferring back closer to home in Florida. And this is something that, you know, I've talked with some of you over some personal messages or private messages on the website. But it's something that, you know, we all sort of saw coming. And whether you didn't know directly, you could sort of see the tarot cards playing that way. And he won't be the last one to leave the program. You will see some more defections, and you will see some late graduate transfers and things alike. But there will be a lot of fluctuation going on with the Ole Miss roster in the next month or two, you'll probably see a decent part of the roster not with the team next year. Of course, four departing seniors, Artie Escobar. You may see one, two, three more. And then, of course, we saw that Tariqa White was named the NBDL Most Outstanding Player of the Week, former Rebel great who declared for the draft after his sophomore year trying to make it back into the NBA. So, of course, we wish Tariqa well, and it'd be nice to see a Rebel playing in some of these NBA games. It's been since we've seen Tariqa White playing, and before that, I believe it was Reed and Cisse. So, it'd be nice to see Tariqa get the call up one of these days.
All right. Well, pro day set for Ole Miss on Monday. The Rebel football team will practice this afternoon, and then they're going to be released for the Easter holidays. Pro day set Monday morning about 10:45. Things getting kicked off inside the Manning Center. I understand everyone you would expect to be there will be there, plus some guys from some recent Rebel teams that are still trying to get in the league. I expect Cody Pruitt to work out. He's been hanging around the Manning Center all spring long and training in Oxford. Understand Sir Darius Bryant will return to Oxford. He's going to participate in Pro Day. And, of course, the big three, Laquan Treadwell, Laramie Tunsil, Robert Kim Dete, all of those guys will be there. Michael Quirk and I will be there all day long as well, providing updates throughout the day on Rebels 247. I want to take a moment and just say, think about how huge the opportunity is for the Ole Miss baseball team this weekend. In the perfect scenario, if they were to sweep South Carolina, leave this series 23-2, having swept the 10th-ranked Gamecocks, and owning a 5-1 record in the SEC. Michael, real quick, back to you. How far up could they move in the polls if that were to happen?
South Carolina is starting to finally earn themselves some respect. If Ole Miss can sweep South Carolina and especially either dominate the South Carolina pitching staff and you see the offense play really well, or if you see the Ole Miss pitching staff out-duel South Carolina and you still know that the Rebels can, in fact, hit and score runs, I'd see them probably jump up into the top three depending on what else happens this weekend. Of course, the number two Aggies have a big series this weekend. And so we'll see. I mean,
there's no one that could put together a better resume than a 23-2 team who would have 3 wins over a top 10 South Carolina team, 2 wins over a top 5 Louisville team, and beat a really good Coastal Carolina team on the road, have not dropped an out-of-conference game, won 2 of 3 in their first road series, and losing that one just on a walk-off after, some heroics from J.B. Woodman to tie it up in the top of the 8th. So, I mean, you can't really find a better resume at that point, and there'd be no one sleeping on Ole Miss if that were to happen. All the sleepers would be awake, so I'd see a top 3 jump in the rankings.
The excitement in Oxford is truly palpable. We're a couple of hours away from first pitch, and going to be a huge weekend one way or the other. Of course, things could go the opposite way for the Rebels this weekend as well. That's why they're playing these games, so we'll see what happens. That's going to do it for us today on the Rebel Rise Live podcast. For Dave Bevan, Michael Quirk, and 247s, I'm David Johnson, and as always, Hotty Toddy.